The tropicalization of the digital revolution. When I first heard that quote attributed to the Minister of Culture of Brazil, Gilberto Gil, I was immediately taken by it. The idea of tropicalization, of course, evoked ideas of hot temperature, of coconut trees, of beaches, of and all this together with laptops and computers and free wireless networks, and it sounded pretty sexy. When I learned more about the actual background of that phrase tropicalization, it was that it dates back to a musical movement in the 1960s, of which Gilberto Gil was one of the protagonists, if I understood that correctly. And the idea is very much what Larry Lessig nowadays calls the remixing culture. So it's a form of appropriation of cultural traditions that are not native to Brazil, but become easily adapted into the culture of Brazil. And of course, after what Larry Lessig said about the read-write culture and the remixing, which is a very strong aspect of this, I would make a fool of myself if I would try to top that. But this link from remixing culture to tropicalization, I think, is a very nice start for this final panel on the free culture nation Brazil. And I would like to ask the first speaker, Claudio Prado, to would you like to speak from there? Yes. To go up. Claudio Prado is the head of the Department of Digital Culture at the Ministry of Culture of Brazil, and he is a key figure in linking various worlds to each other, grassroots movements, the free software movement, the free hardware, the recycling movement that we will hear about from Felipe, but also the world of ministries, of bureaucracies, of politicians, of artists with a large network outside Brazil. He is internationalizing what is happening and laying links between all these different elements. He is moving things that are unimaginable. And I think you're going to be as fascinated as I was when you learn what he's doing. Please, Claudio Prado.
Thank you very much for the invitation and the kind words you just said. The truth is that trying to move all these pieces around is a hell of a tropical mess that we're engaged in. I would like to explain just a little bit what we do and how we do it. We are the Digital Culture Department in the Ministry of Culture of Brazil, the only department of any Ministry of Culture in the world, as far as we know, that deals with the digital revolution from a cultural point of view. In fact, we believe that the only way to understand the cultural revolution is from a cultural point of view. The digital conversion of technologies is changing the world around in such a speed, in such a... Every aspect of everybody's life is changing radically because of the digital, and that's a cultural phenomenon. As far as my opinion, it's a thing that springs out directly from the hippie movement. The hacking, the digital world has a direct link with the hippie movement, and I'm a hippie, as you can see. And this was, and the minister, of course, is a hippie as well. So when he came into power, we decided to do something with around the digital issue. And I say it's a hippie thing because hippies really started the freedom concept. Really, the freedom as we look at freedom today, as Larry Lessig is looking at freedom today, as Yochai Benkler is talking about freedom today, about when Yochai said here about autonomy, about the political aspect of autonomy. All these things did not start with the right or the left. They really did start with the hippie movement. The utmost of freedom was the fucking around that we did in the 60s. Everybody fucking to everybody. It was the biggest taboo there was, the biggest freedom you could have. And this started something that became a cliche, but it became a very serious thing that almost died, and now it's revival again. It's reviving again. It's getting born again in the concepts of the free software, in the concepts of the free culture, in the concepts of freedom of the new society, of the new paradigm of digital society. The Ministry of Culture has a minister that is an author and is a minister of state. He's a well-known world author. He makes money out of copyright, and he's one of the few guys that makes real money out of copyright, and is talking about the copyright as the totally wrong way of engaging the 21st century. This is one of the issues that we discuss all over the world. We talk about, one of the aspects of what we do is talking about these issues, is discussing these issues in forums like this one, inside Brazil, inside society, inside government. There's a lot of people inside our government that don't understand at all what we do. Obviously, governments are totally schizophrenic pieces everywhere. And the issues of the distribution possibilities of intellectual property, the issues of the new ways of reorganizing the economical and financial life of people that produce intellectual property and produce ideas and do things. The fact that jobs will not exist in the 21st century as they were thought of on the 20th and the 21st, on the 19th and the 20th century. These issues are issues that are being discussed in every forum of the world. The conversion of technology has also brought a conversion of the forums in which things are discussed. WIPO does not contain anymore on itself the issue of intellectual property. It has to be discussed in many other forums. All the discussions are coming to converge as well. And this is creating a big mess. The digital world has brought something totally new, broke through the barriers of the 20th century into the barriers of the 21st century. And free software was the beginning of something that is really beyond software. So this is one of the things that we do. We discuss all these issues, and we could stay here discussing them the rest of the night. But the second aspect of what we do is to put into practice what we discussed in theory, which is done in the pontos de cultura, the cultural hotspots, which are a program that the Ministry of Culture has built to bring to small communities, to small NGOs all over the country. There will be about 500 by the end of this year, to bring financial help plus a multimedia free kit studio to people that are basically living in the 19th and maybe some in the 18th century style of life. And this was not a program that was written on a paper and prepared. This was something that was worked on a wiki together with civil society, together with a lot of guys that became interested in the possibility of government dealing with these issues and dealing with this matter together with civil society. It took a long time for the Ministry of Culture to be able to find a way to to finance this department. In fact, I was told when I first talked with Gilles that it will take a month, and he ended up taking a year and a half. So a group of people that amounted to up to 80 people, more or less, worked on a wiki for a year and a half without no payment, and that includes me, the very hippie attitude, working for the government and even representing the government, because I had to go to places to talk about these things in the name of the minister without being from the ministry. And we built this program on a wiki. We have it from the first discussion that we started till the end, word by word. Some of them are unpublishable, but they are there. And this means, a way to explain this is that at the end, we've hacked the government. We made a program and we inserted it inside the government. And now it's an official program of the government, but it is also something very self-sufficient and totally run outside the government. It's inside and it's outside the government at the same time, which is the way in which to deal with these, with the issues today. One foot on the 20th century, one foot on the 21st century. This is more or less what we're trying to achieve there. The program is about bringing financial help and also bringing digital tools for the people in the hotspots. The tools are a free multimedia kit with free software, which we call the third generation of digital inclusion. The first generation is computers for poor people, which is a very stupid thing, with Microsoft, of course, very stupid. The second one is something already a step forward. It's not computers anymore, it's internet, plus wide, plus broadband, plus free software in the telecentros that were places where you had computers for the population to use, run by the people, by the community. And what we are proposing now is the third generation, that on top of the telecentros, the second generation, we include, instead of just computers, a multimedia studio so that people can interact fully with the possibilities of the net. So it's not only text, but it's also graphical images, sound, music, video, and software development. And we also work in recycling hardware, in meta reciclaging, that Philippe is going to talk just after me. And this, bringing these tools to people of the 19th century showed us that there is a real, real possibility of something very, very revolutionary going on. We had some intuition around these issues, but we've become certain of that by the experiments that we have done, that it is much easier and much quicker and much easily understood. The 21st century, it's much easily understood by people that are on the 19 when they receive the tools than the people from the 20. People of the 20th century assume that the 21st century is a step forward from the 20th. And it's not true. You have to go a little backwards to bypass some real confusion that the 20th century has brought us to. And there is no back gear in the engine of progress. So people of the 20th century are stuck against the wall and cannot go further advance to the 21st century. Since we are in the 19th, we can see this from a distance. We can bypass these things. These people there that are receiving 21st century tools don't have the weight, the cultural weight of the 20th century on their shoulders. That means jobs, social security, and all this, all those things that are species, dying species. Job is a dying species of the 20th century. There will not be jobs as thought of in the 19th and 20th century. In the 21st century, there will, and consequently, there will not be social security either. What and those people there in Brazil, to which we are giving these tools, understand this, as soon as they understand the cyberspace, and they understand the cyberspace, understanding uploading before they understand downloading, they start producing and uploading things. They are registering their work, what they are uploading in Creative Commons licenses. They've never heard of copyright. They are beginning to understand the issue of intellectual property rights from the perspective of the Creative Commons, of the copyleft, and not from the perspective, not without never having heard of copyright. It would take me a long time to explain a little more to you. Maybe we leave it at the end. I'm going to talk a little bit more. And I just want to show you, Philippe, can you give me a hand here? I just want to show you a very short film, video clip, of one of the leaders of Aponto de Cultura in Bahia. Bahia is a state in the middle of Brazil. And he's done an interview for me in the middle of a workshop that we did there to show them the tools and to explain them what it is. And I think this shows the degree of understanding and autonomy that these people have achieved at grassroots level. And I will comment this at the end of the panel.
Genial é a cultura digital, com essa provocação do MINC, que é parte do MINC, que aí é o esforço que a gente consegue detectar de um grupo de pessoas que estão passando na máquina pública, que está entendendo claramente um momento de provocar a sociedade organizada, que somos nós, para permitir a instrumentalização, o acesso a essa parafernália tecnológica totalmente mitificada e pôr na mão de quem já está fazendo digital sem ter o equipamento, é fazer com que essa parte da sociedade amplie o seu poder, a sua capacidade de botar a cara, de gritar, de falar. Esse é o ponto legal. O ponto não é que não seja legal, é o ponto que eu acho que nós devemos estar extremamente conscientes que isso é uma passagem institucional. A cara do nosso Estado, com a sua correlação de força política que é real, isso tudo vai incomodar na medida em que os kits chegarem nas mãos desses pontos de cultura, que nós tivermos acesso a essa banda larga e produzir as ideias, não, reproduzir as ideias que nós já produzimos, mas que nós não temos a tela da Globo, não temos a grande mídia, né, e temos que pagar cara uma máquina, um computador. E aí é a voz dos excluídos e de uma vanguarda mesmo, que apesar de excluída, rompe com isso através da cultura. É o lado bom do Brasil, que precisa botar a sua cara. Esse é o lado sensacional, essa contradição rica. Agora, nós precisamos estar atentos. Pegar essas maquininhas, transformar essa oficina numa grande sinergia de integração, de articulação, numa grande rede para a gente ter autonomia. Prado, né? Você, essa equipe que está aí, que não tem a cara de servidor público, eu acho que está servindo ao público, né? É que vai ser legal da gente formar essa rede e na hora que disser Palocci cortou a grana, a gente tem que reagir. E nós vamos começar a reagir agora para dar força a vocês que estão lá dentro, sofrendo com essa, não é burocracia não, essa coisa tensional, muito tensional, de não viabilizar a cultura democrática do empoderamento da sociedade. E aí a gente está atento a isso. Essa oficina já deu caldo, está dando caldo, porque nós estamos começando a fazer essa rede, nos transformarmos numa ação, ocupar o satélite e começar a falar isso, para assegurar dentro da parte governamental que são, é esse grupo do Ministério que está de passagem, que tem a força, e nós é que vamos ser a força para que vocês que provocaram essa coisa excelente, muito pontual, singular, no governo federal agora, para a gente assegurar. E seja lá qualquer que seja o governo, entre Lula, saia Lula, fique Lula, tire Lula, nós precisamos agora entender o seguinte: sociedade quer se digitalizar de maneira democrática, livre.
Manifestação popular de uma sociedade, um ato de indivisibilidade.
Claudio already introduced Felipe Fonseca, one of the founders of the Meta-Reciclage movement that is directly linked to the Pontos de Cultura, but an autonomous movement that's quite a bit older, and that is one of the pre-existing social movements that merges into these cultural hotspots and enabling people by teaching them how to recycle used computers and to make them accessible to people who could not afford them otherwise.
Meta reciclagem, tá aqui. Bom, let's go. I guess I'll give an example of something that Claudio have talked a little bit, that are the things that happen in Brazil, things that happen in digital culture in Brazil that are a different way of dealing with technology. I'll give an objective example. I'll talk about meta reciclagem, this project that I'm part of. Since it started in 2002. And the thing is that I'm part of Meta Reciclagem, but I work with Claudio in digital culture. And Claudio is a hippie and he's part of Meta Reciclagem himself, but things are really awkward in Brazil. Meta Reciclagem is a project. This is too loud now. Meta Reciclagem is a project that has, I don't know, 300 members, and the good thing is that there must be as many definitions for Meta Reciclagem than the number of members that we have. But I guess one of the definitions that is most accepted throughout the network of Meta Reciclagem practitioners is one that explains not exactly what Meta Reciclagem is, but what the Meta Reciclagem is about. And Meta Reciclagem is about a critical use of technology with a deconstructive approach, with the idea of appropriation of technology, trying to create new meanings and new uses for that technology, and focusing on the social uses of this technology. Meta Reciclagem is always trying to develop free knowledge, sharing an open infrastructure, and that starts from the use of free software in everything we do. Documenting everything we learn from our actions and then sharing it in an open knowledge, in an open infrastructure. And the fact that Meta Reciclagem now is a network that is open, emergent, and decentralized, and this is the nature of most of our problems, but this is the nature of, I guess, the rhythm of innovation that happens in Meta Reciclagem. Meta Reciclagem structures itself in these three instances. There are conectases, there are spaces or events that benefit from meta recycled technology. I guess I'll try to explain a little bit about it later. Spora, that is spores, are instances or laboratories that try to develop meta reciclagem and this online infrastructure. Actually, there is another way to call meta reciclagem. There is a mutirão de gambiarra. Mutirão is a common way in Brazilian peripheries to do things based on scarcity of people's lives. You know, you don't have enough resources to do everything you have to do to build your house, everything. And you call everyone, you know, you make this barbecue and everyone will go there because there's a party and everyone will help you to build your house. Most houses are not, you know, straight square angles, but they're up and running. And gambiarra is this thing that is this Brazilian way of solving little problems. So if you don't have the duct tape to, you know, insulate some electrical wire, you can get Durex or any kind of tape to do that. So it's like, you know, an informal way of not knowing exactly how to do things. We do it differently in an informal way. But in 2001, there was this big, I guess, in all over the world, but in São Paulo, there was this big frustration after the dot-com bubble. A lot of people thought they would be rich or millionaire in the next year. And they were not, you know, everything failed. Everyone lost their jobs. And some of these people got together in a mailing list that was Projeto Metáfora because they were interested in free software, but not the, I guess, few of them were developers. There were 150 people, I guess 15 or 12 were developers. They wanted to understand how to extend this way of producing knowledge that the free software has shown to other areas of knowledge. And Projeto Metáfora was this open environment for collaborative projects. There were people from really different backgrounds, from sociologists to journalists to educators to artists, a lot of different people trying to create collaborative projects. In 1 year have been created 25 collective projects. Then we shut it down because it got boring. But one of the things that happened in this year is that emerged this need for an infrastructure. We needed computers to do those projects that deal with technology. And I guess someday someone suggested that we should ask for a donation for some international institution. And the costs for bringing the computer donation to Brazil were too expensive. So we decided to create this project in which we would, in Brazil, ask for donations, computer donations in big companies and governments and so on. And we would do something to them. The fact is that we, two or three people from this group, we got together with this NGO from São Paulo that got donations of all kinds of equipment. And they gave us a space to work, and they gave us these computers, and then suddenly came this donation of 96 computers. And it was four people, and we wouldn't know what to do with those computers. So we started calling volunteers based on those conversations we had on the internet with a mailing list and a wiki. And suddenly the volunteers came, and we were not expecting for them at all. You know, we called them, but we would expect that five or six people would appear. And suddenly there were 20 people, 30 people trying to find ways to do different things with technology. And then we got the space. We started to create telecenters for some social projects in small NGOs. And we entered the market of digital inclusion. At that time, it was really emerging in Brazil. Everyone was talking about digital inclusion. And that's something that we learned over time, is that digital inclusion is a good thing, but it's really not enough. When we're talking about, you know, digital or about critical appropriation of technology, the idea of digital inclusion is that there are people who are out and people who are in. It doesn't make sense at all, because you can be using technology, and even that way, you are still, you know, you didn't change your life at all. So we talk about social technology as a way for people to use technology in order to change their lives, to improve their own lives. Then we went to this place in Santo André, that is a city close to São Paulo, and for the first time we had freedom to do anything we want to. It was a park where everything was recycled, from the library to this bus, that it used to be a bus and became a classroom. And the guys called us to make the network infrastructure of the park. And that's all. And in our free times, we could do anything we wanted. Suddenly, it came 20, 30 volunteers again, and we started to experiment. We started to realize that we didn't want only to, you know, create telecenters with old computers to give only access to internet, and people would go to those telecenters and access global.com, that is the bigger broadcast media web portal in Brazil, or to, you know, to access internet. We wanted people to engage in the technology. We had this container that was a free space. We would use it the way we wanted, and it started more and more experimentation. So we started to paint the computers so people wouldn't be so scared of them, even though this is something scary. But this changed a lot. I've seen this in this place. It was a library. In this size, there were these computers painted. In the other side, there were, you know, beige normal computers. In the other side, those kids and girls from the favela that was close to there would come to us and ask for permission to use the computers. In these computers, they would only, you know, sit down and start using them. Then we started to make, you know, weird things with computers, like creating a desktop with 9 monitors. And this was a mobile station, because we had this, this is not an official information, but we had this first open access point, wireless access point in a park in Brazil. And it covered, we had this, you know, custom antennas, and we covered 5 kilometers from the park. It was in a high place, and using the city administration broadband, and they don't know about it until now. So we would go to the park. This was a mobile station that was for people to be aware of what happened in the park. That was courses about biology and so on. And we started to give workshops and courses to people who lived there, because close to this park there was this favela, a really poor place, and people would go there, have courses. And these are three cooperative associations to which we, you know, we donated some computers, and they learned from us how to use them. And okay, we would do workshops of people learning how to, you know, create your own space, paint your computers, and do everything. Then appeared something that changed the way we understand meta-reciclagem, that in this place, in this favela, that is Sacadora Cabral, some guys from there who didn't have a job, who didn't have, you know, much perspectives in life, they asked us to make their own space inside the Sacadora Cabral. Then we realized that they shouldn't have to ask for our permission. If we are talking about free knowledge, so if we are talking about the free software as a model for what we're doing, people should be naturally creating their own spaces, not having to ask for us. Then we had this other laboratory in the center of São Paulo. That was really a great experiment, because it's really in downtown. Other projects, always trying to experiment more. This was cross table. People would mount computers. It's a workshop, and they would work collaboratively to mount those computers. But that's the point in Sacadora Cabral, when we realized that something's wrong. We're not that open as we say we are. And we tried to understand now meta-reciclagem not as a group anymore, but as an open methodology that following some principles anyone could get and create their own instances of what meta-reciclagem is. One great example, Tatiana and Ricardo are here, they created this. Mimosa is an urban interventional media machine or something like that. They can explain if you want. But other projects appeared. No. As we changed the documentation of it, some independent spaces started to call themselves meta-reciclagem. This is by Lux in Arraial da Ajuda. It's a beach in the northeast of Brazil. This is his only computer. He doesn't have broadband access there, and And what he does, and he calls it meta-reciclagem, is every week he reads a book and sends us an email about this book. But he's a great guy. I never met him, but you know, we've been exchanging emails through our network, through our mailing list for 1 year and a half, I guess. And it is an independent explorer of meta-reciclagem. This is Verne's. Verne is one of these crazy English guys who goes to live in Amazonia in the forest. And he's doing his own meta-reciclagem project there in Livramento. There is a small village close to Manaus. And again, we haven't met these guys. We've never been there. And things started to appear, to emerge without our intervention. Then in 2002 or 3, I met Claudio Prado. And it was not only that, it was not only the Ministry of Culture. Some big projects started to understand and try to and want to replicate that methodology of creating spaces, of people getting those computers and understanding what's inside them and having this critical approach to technology. So there were Autolabs. It was the first, bigger project. It was for 300 people and three telecenters in the east side of São Paulo. It was a great period for learning how to deal with these bigger projects. Then came Cultura Viva, that is this project Pontos de Cultura, that Claudio told us first that would be 100 telecenters in the whole country. We said, no, that's a lot. And then, over time we realized that it would be 600, and we got really scared. Then comes GESAC, that has that is a program of the Ministry of Communications that brings satellite internet for, I guess, 6,000, is that right? What? 3,200 spaces in Brazil. And Casas Brasil, that are extended telecenters, that are governmental projects, and that's the great thing about the chaos that happens in Brazil. Governmental projects adopting this perspective of open networks, of free knowledge sharing, and of deconstructive approach to technology. And from then on, we experienced this radical decentralization, because these projects would go on and would happen anyway. And we would have to adapt. Meta-reciclagem would have to adapt. It couldn't depend on us anymore. So we really decentralized, we really got this approach of, let's put everything in the mailing list, in the wiki, in the weblogs. We have this bookmark, collective bookmark system, and let people organize themselves in their own and decide how they develop meta-reciclagem. For the Pontos de Cultura, for instance, we have these regional workshops that are, we gather all the Pontos de Cultura from any given region in Brazil, and get 100 people, and we make these workshops with them, and they decide what they want to do. So if they want to build a camera out of, a suitcase or something like that, they do that, and we only give them support. And our job in these regional meetings is find free agents, find people who can understand what digital culture can make for them. And then we keep talking with them after we live there, and foster independent spaces of meta-reciclagem to emerge and to join the network of meta-reciclagem and even survive after the government is gone someday. And we have, for the Pontos de Cultura, also these online environments that have to do with the meta-reciclagem approach of, people using technology to talk to each other at first, using technology to watch what's happening in the world, use technology to talk to each other, to organize, to mobilize, and to create their own projects. These two online environments are Converse. Converse is a place where people can only, log in and talk to other people, and they have their own weblogs and conversation systems. And Studio Livre is a website that it's an independent collective that has this website that is an open website based on a wiki that is about documenting free software, free multimedia software. And now there's this gallery where people publish their own production and can share what they produce. This is a sentence that I heard it in Casa de Cultura Tainã, that is one of the best pontos de cultura in Brazil. They say that the drums were the first internet. They're a place that started, it's a project that started 15 years ago as a music school. And it evolved over time to a project with internet and with this perspective of a deconstructive approach where everyone knows how to open a computer, what's inside, and it it has a symbolic meaning over the way they see this technology. These workshops, they create these things, this machine in the bigger picture is one of the mimosas. There are, you know, mobile computers, open computers. And some things that we've learned about metareciclagem over time is that it's about sensibility of treating technology this different way, not only being a user of technology, but, you know, being able to open it, to use it a lot of different ways. Remitification, that is, Lucas Schwerer in the video that Claudio shown, he talks about this highly mitified technology. And we had these discussions in metareciclagem because for some time, I guess the 17th version of what metareciclagem is, say that metareciclagem was about demystifying technology. But then we had this argue with Chico Caminacci, that is one of our contributors. He said that it's not only about demystifying, it's about creating a new myth about technology. Because myths are important in, you know, human history. They can teach people some important things about being people, about being alive. So we want to create new myths for technology, create a new aesthetic for technology. It's about collectivity, it's about doing things with other people, nothing more than that. And it's about free knowledge and starting with free software, but going really beyond, going in the idea of sharing technology. Metareciclagem today is a busy mailing list. Sometimes you have, you know, 100 messages a day. It has a lot of decentralized coordinated actions all over the country. We have more than 20 weblogs that we started like 1 month ago, the weblog system. And there are 8 or 9 spaces that call themselves Spora of Metareciclagem. Because it is an emergent project, it's not up to anyone, to us who started it. It's not up to us decide what is metareciclagem or not. There are the principles. If you follow those principles, you can call your project metareciclagem. And there are plans now for an open laboratory in São Paulo to be a reference center. Yes, that's it. It's very short, but there are a lot of things to talk about metareciclagem.
Thank you, Felipe.
Is this microphone? Yes.
So, the government has been hacked, and we have an infrastructure for the hardware, but of course, what are computers without software? The next speaker, I sort of feel very bad about asking to come on stage again, because she has been on the panel of the future of free software, speaking for 2 hours already. Her voice is barely left after a bad flu, but let's hope, yes, go for it. And for a last effort tonight, tell us about how the free software movement that you are a core person of in Brazil as one of the organizers of FISLI, the Forum Internacional Software Livre, as a member of FSL, FSF Latin America, as the organizer of Women in Free Software Project, please, Fernanda Weiden.
I will do my best, but my voice is really bad today. I will try to talk how these things they are talking, how it happened in the free software community perspective, more in the FISLI organizers' perspective. In 2003, during the International Free Software Forum, was when Everybody thinks that was Gil, but actually it was Claudio Prado who said that we'll tropicalize the digital revolution. After that, I started to get in touch with Claudio Prado. We started to talk a lot. And during the planning for the International Free Software for the next year, we were planning a lot of stuff. The Studios Livre as a project, a community project, were like planning what we want from this and what we want to bring to these communities. And Claudio went to Porto Alegre and we met during a hip hop conference in Porto Alegre to plan what would be the release of Creative Commons in Brazil. And we planned a huge show with thousands of people, a show with multiple different artists from all different places in the world. Well, in the end, we did everything, but it was a bit smaller than we thought. I organized locally all the Creative Commons release, and we managed to get like people working with free radios that, and also with the hip hop movement in Brazil. I managed to bring them inside the International Free Software Conference and put them to talk about their perspective, what do they want from technology and from free software, what would be their expectations. And it was a nice experience. The Gilberto Gil show that we managed to do for the Creative Commons release also was very nice. We released that and we kept working afterwards. The people that were this community, I participated in some meetings because I always thought that the project was great. I still feel a bit part of this group because many of my friends that we were always in touch, they are part of the Ponto de Cultura today. But I, unfortunately, at that time, it didn't happen that I to me to go and join the team. Only informally, which is for the Ponto de Cultura, that's quite formal already. What we did is, I will tell what they did because I didn't participate in this part, but they got like, okay, what we want to do to this community. I will talk a bit more the technology side of all this. The Ponto de Cultura, the idea were like, let's buy some hardware, test that with free software. And Pontos de Cultura were a kind, in Brazil we call that edital, that the government calls organizations to be candidates to receive money or in this case, to receive these equipments enabled with free software to mount a multimedia studio and be able to produce their cultural products or to produce culture everywhere in Brazil. And today the project a bit changed. Now you give the money and the people buy the equipments, but the idea is the same. Enable these people with free software and the communities start, they have like a group of people that teach these people on how to use these technologies initially. And then the community, some of them, they enable themselves and start to be a kind of multipliers of that knowledge, teaching the others how to use that technology to produce culture. The free software community, well, after we have the release of Creative Commons was together with the International Free Software Forum. And since then, we tried to maintain this relationship of the free culture with the people that work in the free software community. I still have contacts with people from the hip hop community. They always ask me for help, which license they should use, Creative Commons licenses for their work and CDs that they want to release. I worked a lot with them in these license issues after the boom of Creative Commons in the International Free Software Forum, when I actually managed to bring around 50 people of the Brazilian hip hop movement to inside our conference. And after that, now every year we have the cultural agenda of the International Free Software with people that produce their own culture and release that in license, alternative license, Creative Commons license. It's becoming more and more difficult to talk. One of the things that I always bring to these people and is, I think, is especially for the people that works with the hip hop culture, I think that work they understand a lot when we try to talk with them, when we start to talk with them about free software and how it is about freedom, about finding other ways to produce and spread knowledge about IT and all this sort of stuff. And when we explain them what is Creative Commons about, because we have a lot of culture producers in Brazil that never would have a chance to actually publish their content, music or videos or whatever, if they would depend on a big recording company to do that. And today, with the Culture Points project, together with free software technologies and the internet that make everything possible, internet make everything that they produce available to all the people, they actually make it happen every day. And that's really cool. I don't know if many of you know Brazil, but Brazil has a lot of different cultural contexts, like a huge country. And something that is true in the South is a completely different reality in the North. And getting all this, the result of these things is actually another project of Claudio Prado, Canto Livre, where you would put everything online to everybody. I don't know how is this project now, but... So producing that, a country that's so big and so rich in different cultural backgrounds, making the people able to produce their contents and share knowledge and enabling people with technologies. And we are not giving them, when we talk about meta-reciclagem, okay, we get the old computers and we put in the hands of these people, but we are not giving them old technology. And that's possible only because it's free software. Otherwise, some of the machines would never run systems that is actually less than 10 years old. So I just wanted like to make this bridge between the community. And now, after all these efforts and after put these people together and work with this project, building this project 1 year and a half as volunteers, and now most of these people are working for the culture ministry, making it happen. But getting everything, and after these efforts from this community, because it was born in sort of free software community with some culture people with involvement in culture production, I would say. Now the free software community is getting a lot back when we see the cultural agenda of our conference in Brazil that is becoming more and more rich because of this kind of project. And yeah, I think we have a lot to learn with them as they had to learn with us, free software community in the past. And now we are doing a very nice exchange. And I hope the things will keep like that. At least from the side of the Free Software Forum organization, I'm pretty sure that we'll manage to more and more get these people that produce their musics and are the real culture of Brazil, not the ones that has access to big companies, to share this, what is the result of their work with the free software community. Thanks.
Thank you, Fernando, for this effort of explaining us all the interrelations with this voice. That was really great. Hello, hello. Is it on? Is it on? It should be on. No, it's not. Yes. So, hip hop was mentioned. Oh, lauter. Hallo, hallo, hallo. Haben wir das ein bisschen? This one?
Hello?
Yes, this is better. It's not on. Oh, it is? It is. Well, any case.
So, hip-hop was mentioned by Fernanda and in other contexts as well. The rich local wide variety of cultural production all over Brazil is, of course, a big issue about Pontos de Cultura, something that will show up on the internet for all of us to appreciate. Ronaldo Lemos, also on the Commons and the Business panel, was talking about music coming from the favelas in Rio, but also the Tecnobrega music from the Northeast. So, after we have heard about three crucial constitutive elements of this network that is emerging, connecting all the different cultural productions in Brazil, we would now like to dive into one of these places where this lively grassroots music, in this case culture, is coming from. And if you have seen the panel emerging over time, there was a different DJ here from Berlin originally on this panel. Eventually he was not available to speak to us here today. And I'm very happy that Fabian Ress, at a very short notice, was ready to speak to us tonight. And not only speak to us, but also to play the first set, is it, at the Netlabel party that follows this session. And Fabian Ress has been living in Rio de Janeiro and playing DJ sets and working with people who play music. He's also a journalist and a TV producer, and with him is Sabrina Fidalgo, a filmmaker and screenwriter and a journalist as well. You're working on a film on the music from the favelas in Rio de Janeiro, Funky Carioca, that Ronaldo was already talking about. So please, the two of them will do this presentation together. Please go ahead.
Hello. So, good evening, everybody. It's an honor for me to talk to you about Baile Funk, which is Funk Carioca. It's a culture from the favelas from Rio de Janeiro. Maybe I give some background before. When we talk about Baile Funk, it's a phenomenon from the poor areas from Rio de Janeiro, which is mainly in the north zone and in the favelas. Baile Funk has a long story. It started like kind of party in the 50s. It was a party made by poor people for poor people. It was to enjoy. The parties became very big. There were up to 5,000 people. And yes, at the beginning of this was the soul and funk music from the United States, which were played at these parties. With this came even up a black movement in Rio. It was, yeah, Movimento Black. And, yeah, this kind of party changed up in a kind of music during the years. So it was funk at the beginning from America, and then came some electronic elements in the 80s, even up to Miami Bass, which was a movement from Florida. And yeah, all in this time, they never cared about common rights, about nothing. It was really a party from poor people. It came up in the radios. So that's why even the richer people started to know about these parties. And nowadays it became a big movement in Brazil. And it's, yeah, it's going out into the world. And yeah, you can hear it after at the party.
Good evening. I just would like to point out that baile funk is the genuine electronic music in Brazil, because electronic music is always came out from Europe. From we have the electro scene here in Germany, then we had the house music in Chicago. But in Brazil, we didn't have nothing similar. We never had an electronic music from Brazil. We always copied drone and bass from UK or whatever, but we never had something like this. And baile funk is the real electronic music. And the curiosity about that is that when we thought, when we think about electronic music, about digitalization or internet or whatever, we always think about resource. Now, because we need to have money to have a computer and so. And that's the nice thing about baile funk, because baile funk were born in favelas, in the low and the poorest areas in Brazil. We have in Rio de Janeiro around 700 favelas, 700 slums. And these people, they have no conditions, no social conditions. They live under very low basis. They don't have school. I mean, they have school, public school, but public school in Brazil, it's really bad. And this kind of music came out from America, from Florida, Miami Bass in the 80s. And these people there in favelas, they loved it somehow. And they started to make this kind of music in favelas. They had old computers. They used to they used kind of software that were very old-fashioned. But even though they made this kind of song of music that became the electronic, the Brazilian electronic music. And about baile funk and digital culture, I think that it's very nice because there are two points. Because in Brazil, the record labels, they never interested. They were never interested to sign up a baile funk artist, because baile funk were always linked to a kind of low culture, culture, subculture from poor people, from stupid people. And it is a kind of, not, of course, this is a prejudice, racism thing. But even though people in favelas, they start to make copies of CDs of these songs. And they themselves start to sell it on the streets, illegal, in an illegal form, and people just came out to buy these CDs, and this music start, this business, and baile funk started like this, and yeah, and they have the opportunity to show off this kind of music only through community radios. And But they never had the media support in Brazil or something like this. Now Baile Funk became more internationalized, but and one of the greatest things on it is the beginning of some free websites like MySpace or Orkut, where people put out your music and where people talk about their work in a freely way. But unfortunately, you need to speak English. You need to have some good basis to start a kind of network like this. And the poorest people in Brazil, they had not this chance to start a network like this. They do it, but they are limited in somehow because they cannot reach Germany. They cannot speak with a German producer who would like to spread out their music because they don't speak English. So in this point came out only the people that had people from middle class or high class in Brazil, people, white people, people from south of Brazil, and they are interested about Baile Funk too, and they have the ways and the tools to reach out this music. I don't know if you know, but I will. There are some names like Diplo or Bonde do Rolé, MIA from London. They are people that they are doing Baile Funk music, but they don't belong to the roots of Baile Funk. They were not there in the favelas. They were not there touring from one favela to another, doing a kind of 10 gigs in one weekend and earning a small budget for this. I mean, these people they are showing their face and they are playing Baile Funk in Europe or worldwide, whatever. They don't belong to the roots, to the favelas. And I think that digital culture is okay, but we need to talk first about education, because you cannot on this digital culture, but you need to have the basis. You need to have education. You need to be able to speak in a way that everybody can listen to you. So I think that the problem in Brazil is always like this, because we talk always about things not from the basis, you know. And Brazil is not Germany. In Germany, everybody has free access to school, to learn English, to use computers or whatever. In Brazil, it's not like this. You need to pay a good school. You need to pay an English course if you want to have more chances to have good opportunities or network or whatever. So, but I think that through this digital culture, many things can happen towards these people, people from favelas that are doing Baile Funk, even though the majority of them don't speak English or don't have access to internet or so. But I think that they have the right because they are doing electronic music in favelas.
So maybe I talk some words again about the favelas, about Baile Funk parties, about the music. So as I came there like a German, I got really impressed because it's a very special kind of party and it's very specially celebrated by the people. It's up to 5,000 people, and it's nowadays it's very professional because there are big sound systems. They have the equipment, they have everything to make these big parties happen. It's the people are really enjoying it. There are big communities now in Orkut, for example, or there are a lot of websites that the people started to make an exchange of this music, even that the music is also produced in America and in Europe. There is the digital way makes it possible that the people start to produce together, that loops are changed and someone sends some music to one other and says, oh, okay, I made this bass, and the next one starts to give the voice, and it goes back to Brazil, and somebody starts to make the text, and so it's networking. But of course, like Sabrina said, it's went out from the favelas. The baile funk, which success nowadays, it's not more the baile funk we know it actually from the favelas, from the years ago. It changed a lot.
Is this on? Yes. So we are coming to an end, but I would like to ask Claudio Prado to wrap it up for us. And then we open it up for questions. So please, if you would like to know more or ask about specific elements.
But first, well, heavy. Brazil is, somebody said, a big place. I think Fernanda says, with lots of different cultures. We're doing experiments in Brazil. Experiments that go, that have been successful. Experiments that can show new ways. And what I would like to say here now is that we are launching here, and not exclusively here, but we're launching here as well, a International Observatory of Digital Culture, which is a site that will be on very soon, with for people to look into the experiments that we are doing, both in the digital culture department of the Ponte de Cultura, but also in other experiments that are going on there in Brazil that uses digital technology for social change. And this is, and we really believe that it's very important that people from here pay attention and give their opinion about what is going on, because this will help a lot the things that are going on in Brazil, the movement, to be autonomous and to be free from government attachments once government changes, or when government decides eventually not to go on with projects like that. And this will certainly happen at one stage, and we don't want people to become dependent on government. So we, as government right now, myself, am working for the projects, for the people to be autonomous and to be free from government. Gilberto Gil said in Tunis, we in government, we work in the government with the hope that we'll not need governments one day. This is a fantastic statement for a minister of state to say, and this is one of the things that we are looking for. And we will have send you, I'm sure that Volker has you, everybody here, listed on an email, and you will be receiving from us information about this international observatory, and we would like very much that you link into that and express your opinion, say the things that you think about what we are doing and about what is going on there. And just one thing that maybe it's good for the discussion. I just want to disagree a little bit with Sabrina that about that people in Brazil need to be educated and to learn English and all that. We found out that illiterate people can use internet very well. I have a grandson of 4. He's illiterate. He uses internet. You can use graphic images. You can use images. You can do videos. You can do a lot of things. You can put your things there. You can talk. You can speak. You don't need to be able to read and write. That's a tyranny. That's something that has been imposed upon a lot of places. Africa is about oral tradition. It has nothing to do with reading and writing. And we should not obey to that tyranny that read and write is the thing. Although I agree totally with Lawrence Lessig when he talks about that, because he goes beyond that issue when he's talking about reading and writing. Of course, I've got nothing against reading and writing, but I'm not limiting the issues of the digital to the people that can read and write. And I think that this is one of the things that go in what we believe is the jump from the 19th to the 21st century, new paradigms possible. I think a lot of discussions that go on in Europe and in the first world are discussions, for instance, here in the Wizard of Oz, I think more than 50%, maybe 80% of the discussions is how people's going to make money. I've been to many panels and a lot of people are discussing how is the money issue, how is the but I think these discussions sometimes stay trapped into the idea that economy will run the world forever. The economy, right. The economy is a trap of the 20th century. You get out of that. It doesn't explain anymore the civilization of the 21st century. Yeah, we are in a world that produces 3 times more food than it's necessary to feed everybody, and half of the population of the world is starving. That's the heritage of the 20th century. Corruption in governments, corruption in big companies, corruption all over the place. So the economy has never talked and never brought the issue of ecology, for instance, to the political field. And you cannot imagine a balance of a country without considering the natural resources in it. This should be a very basic thing the economy should be doing, and they're not doing that. You talk about to economists about those issues, they just divert and run away from these discussions. It's too much. But I think the new paradigm is the cultural paradigm. That changes should be through cultural patterns, that changes should be autonomy of people, that people should be allowed to carry on their local activities and having information through having access to the cyberspace. The cyberspace is the center of the world. It has displaced the geographical notion of the center of the world. Now, if we behind our efforts there in Brazil, it's a policy of a public broadband policy. It's the cheapest and the most innovative and the most revolutionary way to change local realities. And this is what we're trying to do. And we would really appreciate very much your support in the sense of connecting to what we are doing and bringing your opinion in and spreading out and of course, we'll be We would love to have you coming to Brazil at some stage. There's a danger, though, that you might not want to come back. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Claudio. So, abolishment of the state, abolishment of the economy. We already have the program for the Wizards of Oz 5. I hope it wasn't all about... It wasn't all... The Wizards of Oz 4 wasn't all about making money, but at least a little bit about culture as well. And now I open up the floor for questions.
You just made one. I agree with you. It was not about making money, but making money within the cultural new perspectives is a discussion that must go on. What I said, this must exist. It has to be. People need money. They need to survive and everything. What I said is that you have to discuss this outside the trap. There is life, intelligent life outside the trap. And the trap is the economy views.
You're all tired of asking questions? Ready for the party? Yes? I see heads nodding.
Okay. Actually, I don't have an ask to do. I have an invitation to do. I'm from Brazine. Brazine is an NGO from Berlin. And I'm inviting artists and producer, cultural people, wants to work with us and discusses how to make a very good ponto de cultura in Germany. It's just like an invitation, just to make together something good, something new.
Brazini is a magazine for Brazilians and Germans and bilingual, which is a ponto de cultura outside Brazil. There are some ponto de cultura outside Brazil, and Brazini is one of them.
Hello, my name is Eric, and I'd like to know whether at any time you already needed to address any problems around quality management in the self-organized networks of the hardware, all the software, all the co-training, or whether you expect any such, when it grows bigger, for example, when we have 5,000 centers or so. Yes, and when it grows bigger, whether, because I found sometimes then things get out of hand, that doesn't, I mean, we don't want to control, but for example, knowledge transfer, knowledge management, are there already visions how that can be handled when it really evolves and takes off?
Well, I hope it gets out of hands very quick. It is out of hands. It always has been. There is no centralized proposal in that. It's autonomy. They should run themselves. And of course, people are going to do good things and bad things with whatever you give them or you don't give them. This is up to what happens. But the issue of quality makes me say something else. Quality has been lost. There's plenty of people who produce quality, and if you want to buy quality today here in Berlin, you have to pay a lot of money. I'll just give you an example. I'm wearing here a jacket that comes from a Ponto di Cultura and a shirt that's been embroidered in a Ponto di Cultura and started 4 months ago with one computer, Flickr, photos in Flickr and Skype. And some people placed orders because they saw them. Then we asked people to dress what they ordered there and take photos, and it's on the Flickr. So I went with this jacket there to Barcelona in front of Gaudí, and I'm there in their Flickr as a model for those, for this Fondo de Cultura. It's a peer-to-peer possibility. These women there, it's about 40 women that do embroidery and sewing, very beautiful. They used to be in the hands of a dealer that pays, that had used to pay them almost nothing. And now they are selling directly to me, and I paid for that jacket and that shirt that they were both made entirely for them. I paid for the material, but the work costed about 30 euros, and I had to fight them to pay 30 euros. They wanted to charge me half of that because they thought it was enough. So the peer-to-peer possibilities using the full interactivity of a multimedia studio points to a world in which people that are making quality things that now are in boutiques for a lot of money in Europe can be bought directly from the people who make them and having post them to them. And this can go on a peer-to-peer style of life that goes beyond exchanging archives, goes into real peer-to-peer relationship and people. An Indian making basketry in the middle of the Amazon, then you can buy the basket from him for 20 euros. It will cost you 200 euros here if you go to a boutique, if you find it. You can pay 20 euros to him, and you can talk to him, you can see him work, and maybe you want to go there. And if I take Folker with me, which is one of the projects that we have, to go there and see what they're doing there, and then Folker, as a good German Berlin guy, comes and gives an interview and says, this is a cool place, it's the safer place I've ever been to. Other people would love to go there for holidays, because I'm sure this is the holiday you want. It's not going to a 5-star hotel in the middle of anywhere, because they are the same place. You pay a lot of money to go to the same place, not to move. And if you go into the middle of the jungle, you have mosquito problems, but you have other joys. And it's going to be real fun, and you come back with some real new ideas, and you can rest because something totally different is going to come in front of you. You get out of your daily life and go to something else. Peer-to-peer is a new style of life that is possible through understanding technology for social change. And that is nothing to do with exchanging archives. And that brings back the possibility of quality, both for who produces it and for who misses it.
I would like to be really optimistic about the digital culture, but if we listen to the one woman of color on the panel, I think she told us a story where there really isn't a lot that's coming back into the favela from the fact that this music culture has spread to the West. In fact, more, it's been appropriated by the West and people capitalize on it in the West. But unfortunately, there isn't a lot that comes back to the favela from the fact that we take this information out from them, and this very celebratory culture. And unfortunately, I don't think that they're profiting very much from the fact that it's come out to the West. And I think it would be an important thing to look at the dangers of the digital culture and how maybe it isn't really bringing sustainable culture to these places at the moment. I would like to be optimistic. I hope we can find ways to do that. But I through Felipe's demonstration as well, I appreciated the fact that we could see some possibilities happening where through a kind of deconstruction of the Western cultural imperialism, of these Western tools that come into these places, that at least there's these opportunities to deconstruct and kind of make them open and maybe rebuild the way that these cultures would try to do that. But in the last panel, we had a situation where two questions came up, and there's a crisis here where there's very little gender balance, and there's also not a lot of non-Western participation in the creation of digital culture. And I think the reason for that is because they might see that as a kind of cultural imperialism, that there is a danger of this patriarchal kind of digital culture that's being imposed on them. And I just wonder if you all could respond to these perspectives, that there is a really big danger of digital culture that we need to deconstruct and analyze.
I'm not sure I got everything, but the first thing that came up in my mind when you told about that was a question for you. What is the value of the culture if it's not exchanged? Because I think what makes us like so, what makes the human being so fantastic is the fact that we are so different in so many different ways. But if we never exchange that with each other, what is the value of all that? Things that we are talking here about exchanging experience and exchanging a cultural background would be nice if money come out of it. And everything that you do, there will be always people working to make it happen and people willing to make some profit out of it. I think all of us here, we are trying to make it happen. Maybe a lot of people will profit from what we are doing, but this is a part of the game. And it would be nice if the people doing the work also can do that. And I think, at least from what I know of the techno brega and from the funk in Rio de Janeiro, should be the same. Somehow, the culture that is produced there, they created a new way of spreading culture, selling the CDs, making deals with the street vendors, and getting money off that without even need a big recording company. Okay, some people come to Europe with a couple of CDs and make parties here. Yes, it does, but we are talking about getting out of control, out of the control of the others, and now we are starting to willing to control two or three DJs that came to Europe to make parties with the CDs that are produced there. I think this is part of the game, and yeah, let's play it.
I guess it goes in the direction of Claudio was saying that profit is not our main issue. I guess culture is sustainable in itself, and it has always been. It always will be culture in a broad sense. But I don't think I see this as a threat, as a direct threat, at least, because this thing about making or producing culture, making music, making videos, and having getting your life out of it. Like earning your money out of it is it's not a common perspective anyway, in Brazil. Few people can do it. So culture happens besides it. So people don't make music to make money. That's a discussion I was having with Ricardo. People don't make music in Brazil, thinking at first place in making money. Perhaps in São Paulo, teenage bands start just like that. But in all the rest of Brazil, people make music because it's part of their culture, and money has nothing to do with it. I guess what we are bringing with this kind of use of technology may lead to things like this, you know, people appropriating those cultures to use it somewhere else and make money out of it. But I guess the perspective of having free knowledge has to have this possibility. And it won't change at all culture there. I guess culture is sustainable in a local way. And things like, so I'm making music here in, you know, in the countryside of Mato Grosso, and I'll start to make money by selling this to Japan. It doesn't make sense at all, because if I want to make money with music, I'll have to, you know, create some kind of sustainable environment here where I am, or whenever. But it's not, you know, what we think about when you are creating culture at all.
Yes. What is your name? Sorry? Mal. Sorry, I didn't get it. Bod. Okay. Bod. Okay. I think you've asked the wrong question. The danger of digital culture, it's exactly the other way around. Digital culture is endangering capitalism. If these guys there want to make money out of what the appropriation of their work here in Europe, they fucked up. They will be lost. And they will be trapped into the same mess that they're out. And that's the danger for them, to start thinking that they should make money out of the appropriation of what they are of their works elsewhere. I mean, if you agree with some ideas that I gave here today, do you owe me something? It doesn't make sense. Everybody appropriates everything from everybody. That's what living is about. That's what education is about. You listen to something, you see something, you listen, and then you remix it. We are very similar to rats and monkeys as far as DNA is concerned. Very little difference. We're a copy with a little difference from each other. Very little difference. The difference is that we appropriate differently. That's the only difference. And I think there is a danger, yes, of digital culture overthrowing capitalism, but not the other way around.
This issue of appropriation closes the loop, and we're back at tropicalismo, at tropicalizing the digital revolution, and I think this is a beautiful endpoint. Please give a big hand to our final panel from Brazil. Thank you.